The Army is shrinking down to about 450,000 soldiers. Now it's trying to get its base footprint in line with that, since Congress isn't likely to approve another round of base realignment and closure anytime soon. The Army's taking a different strategy. Federal News Radio's DoD reporter Jared Serbu writes about the downsizing in the latest edition of Inside the DoD Reporter's Notebook.
They're basically telling base commanders across the country to consolidate the soldiers they do have after that reduction down to 450,000 soldiers from the current 490. After they complete that reduction to 450,000 soldiers, they're going to have a lot of excess facilities. They have a lot of excess facilities already, but the way that the forces are kind of distributed on each individual base is you've got one command might have some personnel in this building and scattered over in another building. So in effect, you have a lot of half-empty buildings. Mm-hmm. They're trying to eliminate a lot of that problem. They just signed an execute order from Lieutenant General David Halverson, the commander of Army Installation Management Command, telling all these commanders around the country, consolidate all your personnel into the newest and best buildings that you have on your base, and then do your best to shutter, to mothball, to put in cold storage the rest of the ones that are left behind, because just about everybody's got more buildings than they actually need once this drawdown is completed. So a couple issues there. Once you're going to have kind of a mix of buildings that are still in perfectly usable condition, so they want to preserve those in case they need to ramp up force structure again at some point in the future, for example. But they're also going to have a lot left behind that are just not in usable condition and need to be demolished. Problem is, there aren't even enough funds in the Army's sustainment, restoration, modernization, MILCON budgets, et cetera, to perform that demolition. So a lot of interesting issues at play there.
It seems like they're doing this in a logical way. You write inside the Reporter's Notebook this week that General Halverson and Catherine Hammack, the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment, are saying, let's get people out of the oldest buildings first, mm-hmm. because they're the ones that are most expensive to maintain,
right.
and most likely in the highest level of disrepair. And so from a logic perspective, that appears to make a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's right. And I think it's going to do a couple things. One is, obviously, this is kind of in lieu of a BRAC round, which is what the Army really wants. They think they've got about 18% excess infrastructure on average. But it's pretty clear that Congress is not going to authorize another BRAC anytime soon, at least. So I think one of the things they're going to be able to do is, once they consolidate into this smaller number of buildings and have a lot of literally completely empty mothballed facilities, it will be much easier visually to point and say, dear member of Congress, look at all these big empty buildings that we have on virtually every Army installation in the country. And I think that will potentially really make clear the need for another BRAC, both to members and their communities, who, by the way, a lot of communities are increasingly favoring another BRAC round. There was a poll of the members of the Association of Defense Communities a few months back where they were basically asked, and these are, you know, local mayors, council people, county commissioners around military bases. They were basically asked, what would be worse, another BRAC round or the status quo? The status quo being, you know, these ghost towns that are starting to pop up all over the country, basically, mm-hmm. on Army bases, because the Army is shrinking. These people are, you know, military personnel are not on them in nearly the numbers that they had been during the height of the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. So mm-hmm. these folks are feeling it, with or without another BRAC.
The part of this that's interesting to me is how the civilian side of the federal government has been almost relentless in trying to eliminate footprint and has not gotten one single bit of pushback, even as they do it around the country,
right.
Reducing office space like crazy. And everybody thinks that's a fantastic idea. The idea of reducing these military installations is just absolute anathema. I can't think of a single member of Congress that thinks it's a great idea.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I think one issue there is that on the civilian side, it tends to be a lot more piecemeal with you know, mm-hmm. one facility closing here, another facility closing there, versus this big, scary thing called BRAC, where within a couple years, you're shutting down potentially many, many bases. And it's not just a building in most cases. It's going to be, DoD's adamant about this, if they get another BRAC, it's going to be about closure. It's mm-hmm. not going to be about realignment. And so you're going to see entire, you know, many thousands of acre facilities get shut down and turned over into private hands. And also, you know, communities and members of Congress many of them have experience with prior backgrounds before. The ones in the early and mid-90s really did shut down a large amount of bases. And in some cases, those were really painful decisions. I think about a lot of the instances in Northern California, for example, where there were probably a half dozen bases shut down just in the San Francisco Bay Area during that time.
So when I think about the image that you painted earlier of buildings being completely empty, I also imagine a briefing from somebody at DOD, maybe it's the Army or another branch, going to Capitol Hill with these huge poster-sized cards that they take in presentations with pictures of the building and this...
Boarded-up windows.
Well, and then on top of it, a price tag that looks like it was rubber-stamped on it, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And that's how much this building costs to operate every year as the military tries to make the case. Here's a building we don't need anymore. It costs us this much every year, and this could be turned, in the old Bob Gates analogy, from tail to tooth.
Yeah, that's true. I should mention one more thing about this. I mean, I really don't think this is entirely a political gesture where they're trying to demonstrate the need for a BRAC. It really is a real nuts and bolts budget issue too, because the reason that they need to save on these operating and maintenance and facility sustainment dollars right now is because they have very few of those dollars. They got cut dramatically in fiscal 13 when sequestration first hit. In 14 and 15, they really didn't bounce back. So there is now a gigantic maintenance backlog in the Army. It would cost them about $30 billion to restore all of the facilities they own back into good condition, and just the items that they've tried to get to but haven't been able to amounts to about $3 billion. So in fiscal 2016, they were supposed to bounce back from that a little bit. They were going to try to fund at least 80% of the maintenance requests that were coming in. Obviously, that's not 100% still, but as long as we've got a continuing resolution, we're still living under fiscal 2015, maintenance and operation levels, which were not good in terms of building maintenance. So that backlog is almost certainly going to continue to grow.
Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu, and I do not mean to imply that I thought that this was only a political gesture either.
No, you didn't
say that, I know. Because there certainly is some, you can make a very good hard dollar argument here. If there's an opportunity for them, though, to advance a political case, I don't see anything bad about doing so. When that opportunity presents itself. Inside the Reporter's Notebook this week, you're also writing about a new initiative to drive cybersecurity compliance and change culture. And I'm going to guess that the second piece of that is probably going to be harder for the Department of Defense than the first piece.
Yeah, I think that's true for just about everybody in the cyberspace. This report, this tasking memo from Secretary Ash Carter and General Martin Dempsey just before he left as Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, establishes this new thing called the DoD Cybersecurity Culture and Compliance Initiative. It really is trying to get after that culture piece in several areas of the memo. DoD officials talk about the fact that they're really good about reporting and accountability and constantly assessing behavior in other areas of warfare, but they're just not there in terms of cyber. There's a very large amount of concern right now that the vast majority of successful intrusions into cyber systems within the Pentagon are just the result of people not taking existing policies seriously, whether that's, plugging a thumb drive into a computer against policy, whether it's not following the appropriate procedures to make sure your systems are continuing to be patched. Those things altogether amount to being responsible for about 80% of the breaches that the Pentagon's had over about the past 5 years. So the whole point of this, as it's called, DC3I initiative, is first, let's get really serious about training people on the bad things that can happen if you don't follow the policies we've already got. And two, start to drive in some level of accountability that's more commonly seen in other areas of the military. So you're going to start to see there already are some inspections, both at the service level and at the DoD-wide sort of DISA level, but you're going to see more of those. DoD is going to start funding more of those. So DISA will do both scheduled inspections and no notice inspections, where, no kidding, they just literally show up at your doorstep and start going through your systems. And when they find problems, they're going to, in at least some cases, insist that the problems be fixed right away.
It must be absolutely mind-boggling to some of these folks that they're still having to deal with these issues 7 years after Buckshot Yankee.
That's right. Yeah, I think it is. And after Buckshot Yankee, you know, there was a lot of attention paid to the issue, but I'm not sure there was ever a comprehensive effort to try and make sure that the training got down to every single level. And that's what I think that's what they're trying to do differently this time. So it's going to be driven into what, you know, new recruits hear about. It's going to be driven into professional development training, every single military exercise going forward, but both the combatant command and the service specific level is supposed to have realistic simulations of a cyber adversary attacking you at the same time and having to deal with that, because that's what real war is probably going to be in the future. It's going to have some kind of cyber component too. So I think this is a lot more comprehensive, hopefully, than anything that we've seen before. And they're kind of rushing it through. They've given the chief of U.S. Cyber Command and the DoD CIO 120 days to come up with the initial workings of the plan, which is just kind of that front-end educational piece to talk about, again, as I said, the bad things that can happen if just dumb behavior leads to a cyber breach. And then another 120 days after that, the service chiefs and the combatant commands are going to have basically to come up with detailed plans on how they're going to drive these, what they call principles of operational excellence in cyber, into, like we were saying before, just about everything that they do on a day-to-day basis.